The unsession one first?
Let's do Game and Fish first.
Game and Fish.
Yeah, 22-7. 22-27.
Where's Engelbretson? He's got to be here somewhere. He's hiding someplace in here.
This meeting of the Senate Environment and Energy Committee will come back to order. And we have two bills. Senator Schmidt, you wanted to deal with the 2277 first. Okay.
That's right,
Mr.
Chair. We've
got the subcommittee report in front of us, and I wanted to say I know there will be several amendments to this. The reason it went to the subcommittee is for the subcommittee to do its good work, and so I'm going to encourage people to I know there's at least one or maybe several hot little issues in it, but I hope we can largely respect the work of the subcommittee. And with that, Senator Schmidt moves the subcommittee report, which is in front of us. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 You can vote too.
I'll vote twice today.
And those opposed, motion prevails. Go ahead.
Right, well, Mr. Chair and committee members, thanks for the chance to present this subcommittee report to you today. And I know that we waited an extra half an hour just to build the anticipation for this bill and the one that follows. So thanks for sticking with us. You know, what we're trying to accomplish here with the Game and Fish bill here is to promote fishing and hunting recreation in Minnesota. And much of this bill constitutes some technical changes and policy changes recommended by DNR to those ends. And also we have, as an omnibus bill, a number of ideas brought forth from committee members and others regarding hunting and fishing in Minnesota. You can see the summary for the bill. It is quite long. There are a number of aspects to it. But I would just maybe bring your attention to a couple of different items here and would be happy to take any questions along the way. I know that we do have a movement towards recreational shooting clubs, an appropriation of $2 million from the Game and Fish Fund to finance a cost share grants to local recreational shooting clubs as a way of encouraging young people to participate in this sport. There's been a tremendous uptick in this activity through the Minnesota State High School League with the clay target leagues that are out there. And this is a bill brought to us from Senator Saxhog. And I should mention, I think right out of the gates here, we do have an amendment that we could probably pair on with that. I think it's the A4 amendment that clarifies that bill. Maybe we could get that in front of.
We'll deal with that in just a minute. Why don't you keep going through it, and we'll take that up.
And I'll run through this. And Senator Saxhog brought us another bill that we included in the omnibus here. And this is dealing with crossbow hunting. And it allows individuals over the age of 60 to take deer, bear, turkey, or rough fish by crossbow during their respective regular archery seasons. And that was originally Senate File 2018, and it's included herein. And also we have deer in a contest raffle brought to us by Senator Thomasoni in the original Senate File 2048. It allows organizations licensed to conduct raffles to hold a raffle in conjunction with a contest for deer that are illegally taken and tagged. So just clarifying that that's fully authorized. And again, that's from Senator Thomasoni. We also have an item here that probably is going to catch a little bit of a discussion here today, and I'm guessing your emails may have filled up over the last week regarding the increase in the size limit for taking home muskies. Currently it's at 48 inches, and a bill was brought to us from Senator Hoffman that would increase that limit to 55 inches, and I imagine we will have a little discussion around that. I am told that
Why are you looking at me?
I think your problem, Senator Brown, deals more with the northern pike in Lake Mille Lacs than with muskies. But I know that was a sensitivity for you. And I've been assured that this size limit probably won't affect walleye populations in Lake Mille Lacs. But nonetheless, that was a point of discussion during the subcommittee hearing earlier this week. We also have renewing the discussion from last year regarding the cattail removals in Loring Park in Minneapolis. And it's posed as the city would describe, a safety hazard for folks visiting Loring Park. And what we're asking here is that the DNR commissioner be directed to issue a general aquatic plant management permit for mechanical or chemical control of hybrid and narrow-leaved cattails in Loring Park. And this was in our bill last year, and it didn't make it over conference with the House in the final days of session. This is a bill from Senator Dibble, and if he's able to join us, I'm sure he'll speak to its qualities. And then we also had a discussion in the subcommittee earlier this week on the bobwhite quail population in Minnesota. And there's been some concern as to whether or not this population still exists in strong numbers. We hear from folks in southeastern Minnesota in particular about the fact that they are present. And what we're asking DNR to do is to develop a feasibility study to restore Minnesota's historic native population of bobwhite quail. And I know this harsh winter may pose a challenge to them in the future, but folks will attest that they continue to see them. And if we're going to hang on to this population, we ought to think about how to take steps towards that. And I guess with that said, I would invite any questions regarding technical aspects of this bill, or else if DNR would like to come up here to speak to some of their technical language that they're bringing before us. Otherwise, Mr. Chair, I would understand that the A4 amendments before you regarding the SACSOG bill that's included in here, Senate File 1748, maybe staff would like to speak to that amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members. It's Senate File 1748. It was a SACSOG bill. We actually heard this in Finance Division on yesterday. And DNR apparently is fine with this version. It just replaces the version that DNR has with this version. And this would allocate $100,000 for in Itasca shooting range, and then open up the $200,000 that was of the $300,000 that was appropriated in 2008 to more broadly use it for basic hunter education, including I think the department's talked about having ranges on some public lands to provide shooting opportunities for people who are in those training programs. And so this is basically the SACSOG bill to replace what was in the bill coming in the department's bill.
Senator Schmidt, you're moving the A4 amendment?
Yes, sir.
Is there any discussion on that? Is there anyone who needed to speak to that amendment? If not, any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
All right.
Did you want...
And I should tell you, we have a second, it's more technical amendment, the A5 amendment. We may as well get in front of committee members right now.
Okay. Did Mr. Bogusman testify while you're getting it distributed? Or is it just...
Knopf, if you'd like to speak to that, I think it's a pretty quick change. Yep. I think it's something that you had caught.
Well, Mr. Chair, it has to do with the department was proposing invasive species training for people who commercially catch and sell minnows and leeches. And that's on... It's on page 18 of the bill of the subcommittee report, and in reviewing it, the concern I brought up was that a person, but it says whenever they're transporting minnows, they have to have this certificate on them. Well, transporting minnows could be for recreational fishing, and I think to be clear, it would be better to say transporting for sale, so that and also same with residents under the age of 18 can trap and sell leeches without a license. And so this in subdivision 3 on 18.24 also included that requirement for those that are under 18 to have this training. And the thought is that we should make sure that we're talking about transporting for sale and not just any transporting of your little leech container for you bought at the bait store.
Senator Schmidt moves the A5 amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, and I understand there may be a second small but significant amendment that Senator Coonan would like to offer, and I'd certainly stand for that.
Senator Coonan,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment I have is the A3 amendment.
Why don't you speak to that while it's being distributed?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this amendment would do would allow an individual to purchase a pictorial stamp without paying for the stamp validation.
Excuse me.
Minnesota statute exempts people under 18 and over 65 from having to purchase these validations. However, nothing in statute that allows an individual to pay only to purchase the stamp. In other words, someone over 65 still has to pay for the validation even if they want to receive the stamp. And that's, in case of, for example, if they are collectors. This amendment would allow for just the purchase of the stamp. And this is already in place for the turkey stamps. And, for example, the turkey stamps for these collectors, and this would be for people over 65, is about 75 cents on the collectible stamps form that I have here from the DNR. worry if you were going to get a pheasant stamp, that would be $8.25 because of validation. And so what this does would allow this to happen for all of the stamps. And Senator Schmidt, hearing what you think about this and the rest of the committee.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I would support this amendment, and I understand that DNR has no objections from it. I can't speak for them, but I would encourage members to support this as well. And sorry we're coming to you with so many amendments. I think with our tight schedule this year, we had a couple of loose ends. We didn't quite tie up last week, so sorry about that.
I think you resolved a lot of issues already, so yeah, these are small.
We're working through it.
Senator Coonan moves the A3 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, if I could just draw the attention of committee members, since we were just on page 18, if you could turn to page 17, this is section 40. This is a bill that was brought to us last year from Senator Brown regarding those pesky Canadian geese causing damage. And even though it didn't make its way into law last year, it was such a great idea that that DNR has proposed it in their bill itself. So I just wanted to flag that. That was something that we had talked about last year, and I understand that that's a problem that's fairly pervasive throughout the state. So I just wanted to draw that to your attention as well.
Okay.
And with that said, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to stand for them. Otherwise, I'm not sure if we'd like to have some additional testimony here.
I don't feel any need for additional testimony unless other members of the committee are eager for that. If not, questions from the committee. Oh, Mr. Neumeyer, are you waiting to testify? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Richard. I believe that you have on the back of your bill a bunch of repealers. I've been here at the legislature for a long time and gone for many so-called sessions. And one of the things sometimes that folks may not realize is that the reports are things that are done is one way for the public to be able to make sure things are going right. And even legislators themselves, sometimes I've heard legislators say, well, we need that information for a particular thing or whatever. And what happens, sometimes I've heard, well, we erase that report. We don't get those charges. And so there have been a couple things that I've seen. And I just want to bring to your attention at least two on page of the regular language. It says 848A104. That you wish to repeal as the county auditor to make a list of lands.
You know, your expertise is in the environment. But I just share with you that when you do these kinds of reports and you might see other kinds of bills, ask how is the public going to be able to get that kind of information again? Secondly, I've heard the comments sometimes and I've fought these kinds of suggestions and I've won sometimes.
Because nobody looks at it.
How do you know that? Particularly when you ask agencies. They can't qualify.
So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee,
you know, at least,
you know, like a county auditor to make a list of lands and just update them on a regular basis. I think there's probably of interest to some people out there. They're not here. They may not know.
But somewhere down the line,
some folks may have interest in those kinds of things. And in other things, when you do some of these on-session bills, I hope you keep
that in mind, the general principle of things that I've shared with you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Mr. Bogus, did you want to comment? And by the way, when I was asking if any committee members wanted testimony, we're not saying to members of the audience, if people do have other concerns as we go forward, please let us know. Mr. Bogus, did you want to comment on the reports that are in here being reviewed?
Mr. Chair and members, Ed Bogus, Director of Fish and Wildlife for the Department of Natural Resources, and this is part of the on-session obsolete laws section, and I don't have the entire history on this, but as you can see that, you know, these reports were from 1929 and afterwards, and relate to the Lac La Parle project specifically, and I don't know the last time that there's been a report or that we've used a report of this, so we just feel that this is definitely in the category of obsolete language that goes back literally, you know, 90 or close to 90 years.
And did you have any other comments about other parts of the bill that the department wanted to express interest in or not?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Schmidt did a good job of pointing out the portions of the bill that didn't originate with the department. I'd be happy to answer questions on any of the other portions. I would just say that parts of this bill obviously came from other bills that we testified in subcommittee. The amendments that were just adopted by the committee, we don't have any comments on. The appropriation for the $2 million appropriation out of the Game and Fish Fund, that's Section 52, and that also relates back to Section 9 of the bill on page 4, is not something that we're currently supporting because it's not part of the governor's supplemental budget. But I think many of the members of the committee are probably aware there's been a large infusion of federal aid dollars from the federal excise tax on firearms and ammunition. And we are discussing with the Game and Fish Budget Oversight Committee and others potential budget initiatives for the next biennium, which is where we would intend to try to address this type of provision. But conceptually, it's consistent with some of the things that we're talking about. I would just point out the provision that Senator Schmidt mentioned in Section 50 that relates to Senator Dibble. I don't think was in the room at the time, but to hybrid narrowleaf cattail control in Loring Park Late. This is similar to the provision last year, as Senator Schmidt pointed out. It does talk about an unrestricted general aquatic plant management permit, and that's kind of a new term, and we're not exactly sure what the intent of that is. We have been working with the Minneapolis Park Board and want to continue to work with them and Senator Dibble on this issue. We do have some concern about what the potential precedents of unrestricted general aquatic plant management permits might be. So we would like to continue having discussions with Senator Dibble and the committee on that provision. Other than that, Mr. Chair and members, that's all the comments the department would have on the provisions that didn't originate with the department. And if there are any questions for me on the department provisions, I'd be happy to answer those or respond.
Senator Dibble, I had a question about that. I mean, why the unrestricted? I mean, if you want to be allowing them to use mechanical or chemical control, why do you need the words unrestricted general instead of just the normal aquatic plant management?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because we need to get rid of all the cattails in Loring Pond. DNR wants us to either go so slowly as to make the removal pointless or to leave some, which then, these are so virulent and they spread so quickly that if we leave any in Loring Pond will be crowded out again and have no visible water once again in the very near future. So unrestricted refers to the Park Board's ability to remove all of the cattails and not some of the cattails or at such a slow rate as to make the whole point of undertaking this activity meaningless.
Further questions of the bill, discussion of the bill, amendments to the bill? Senator Schmidt.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it's a consensus. This is a good bill, so if you would entertain the committee to pass it on, I'd love to make that motion.
Senator Schmidt moves that Senate File 2227 is amended. Be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary, I believe you're headed to?
Actually, we actually may need to make a stop in Stanton Local Mr. Chair, if I'm not mistaken.
State and local tomorrow and judiciary.
Yeah, so
state and local tomorrow. Okay.
State and local tomorrow and judiciary Friday. Oh my. Everybody wants to talk about this game and fish bowl.
You can have fun. Oh, we have some people in the... Okay, we have some people who did want to speak to address the issues in the bill. Welcome to the... Please step forward and identify yourselves and speak to... I'm sorry.
We haven't talked about this change that they're looking to make on discharging a firearm.
Please identify yourself for the committee and go ahead.
Kimberly Dimmick, Hastings, Minnesota.
Page 13.
Last week in subcommittee, we quickly discussed the situation and kind of came to a little bit of an agreement with the DNR on changes and made some changes that are being recommended. I'm still okay with those changes, but in looking over this law, there's another change that I would like to bring up and possibly have a change made. This all kind of started when the line was put in to protect livestock, 500 feet from a stockade, no discharge of a firearm within 500 feet of a stockade or corral.
Excuse me, so you're talking about page 13, lines 27. And
Mr. Chair, this is section 28.
Correct.
Please continue.
Was put in not because of hunters, but because of unruly neighbors who are randomly discharging firearms. So the problem isn't with the hunters, but with other people just standing on their property shooting while kids are riding horses. Personally, I have a commercial business. I board horses, and I have a new neighbor that's moved in who will shoot while I'm doing riding lessons. I've tried to work with him over the past 2 years and have used this law to stop him from doing any shooting on his property anymore. we did come to an agreement that during hunting seasons, on public lands, that this 500-foot rule would not apply. The DNR said the problem they were having was hunters were coming forward and saying people were using this law to put one-acre pens on each corner of their property, putting goats in them, which wasn't allowing people to hunt on these adjacent hunting lands. In looking through this law, at the very beginning of it, it states, a person may not take a wild animal with a firearm within 500 feet of a building occupying a human or livestock without the written permission of the owner, occupant, or lessee. I would like to see that change to no person may discharge a firearm within 500 feet of a building housing a human or livestock. This will not change anything for the hunters. They already cannot hunt within 500 feet of the buildings, but it will protect the rest of us who do have livestock from anybody walking up and discharging by our barns or our homes or any other public. Nowadays, you see, you don't have the average 100-acre farms or 40-acre farms. A lot of the subdivisions now have under 5 acres, and the houses are close together, and I think this is a real safety issue. I did send everybody an email with a website that tells you how far an ammunition can travel, individual types of ammunition can travel. And I think the 500-foot rule was put in for safety, not only for livestock, but for humans too. So I don't have a problem with the line that's been added, but I would like to see a change in the beginning of this to say discharge of firearms, not taking of a wild animal within 500 feet of a building housing humans or animals.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Mr. Schmidt?
Mr. Chair, I think it would probably be appropriate for DNR to come up. They've been in conversation with interested parties on this item.
Okay. Did you have comments on the same issue? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
My name is Pam Jewison, and I live in rural Lee Seward County, and I also have equine on my property, and I live in a housing development of, I suppose there's 40 houses in my development acreages. I have just under 5 acres. I have one of the larger parcels, but it goes down to a regular lot size. And I think as a safety issue that you should not be allowed to discharge a firearm within 500 feet of a building that occupies a human or livestock. It's a safety issue. I don't ride my snowmobile next to my neighbor's house around his house just as common courtesy. My husband hunts. My daughter hunts. So I'm not against hunting, but I think in the overall scheme of things, it's a safety issue. Horses and other large livestock, when a gun is shot, spook. And if you've ever tried to stop a horse running, you can't. The horse will go through the fence, it will run out on the road, and the potential to get hit, have a car hit or a truck hit, it doesn't turn out well for the occupants of the vehicle or the animal. So I'm not trying to discourage people from hunting, but it's twofold. The hunters have a hobby, and there are other people that have hobbies too. So coming to a common ground, like it was said earlier, there's already a law in place that says you can't take a wild animal within 500 feet of a building occupied by a human or livestock. So I think that changing it to just discharging a firearm would satisfy a lot of people.
Questions from the committee? If not, if DNR can come up and comment.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. First of all, I want to thank the two witnesses for helping us work on this language. I think they've been in communication with a lot of members of the livestock and industries and members who are working impacted by this issue. This issue was created, I want to say, about 5 or 6 years ago as we were trying to resolve this concern about harassment from a neighbor discharging a firearm to harass their neighbor's livestock. We worked with, I believe it was Senators Westrum, Senator Tomasoni, and actually Representative Mary Murphy in the House to craft the current language, and inadvertently we caused this problem that exists today that we're trying to resolve. The language before you is a compromise that we've been able to reach over the past several days that would deal with the discharging of firearms during hunting season on public property, but it doesn't resolve the issue of private property or of private resident want to hunt on their own property, that your neighbor may have a corral like this. And we've committed to the stakeholders and other stakeholders that we need to spend time over the interim and work on that piece of this as well. So we need to keep working on this issue. But this is the first step, and we're grateful to be here today. As to their concerns about changing the language, we don't see a problem with changing that term. I'd like to ask Senate Counsel's input into that, is there may be something that, again, that we're creating a problem by changing the term taking to discharging a firearm. So I think we understand the concern and would support their recommended changes, but we want to make sure we aren't intentionally causing any other problems as well.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know about people under the permit to carry and things like that, whether or not that would affect some of these things. One option would be to say, unless otherwise provided by law, a person may not discharge a firearm within 500 feet of a building or something to that effect.
And we, Mr. Chairman, members, we would support that language.
And Mr. Chair, I know that there have been a lot of conversations in the last couple of weeks over this topic, and I imagine we'll have to continue those conversations moving forward. But if the language that Council has proposed here meets, I guess, favorability with the committee, I'd be happy to entertain that as an amendment.
Mr. Knopf, are you ready with the wording?
I am, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, on 13.22, before person, insert unless otherwise provided by law, comma. Excuse me, this should be before of. I'm sorry. I'm doing it quickly and put the carrot in the wrong place. By law, and then you would strike take a at the end of that line, and then strike wild animal with on 13.23 and insert discharge. So it would read, unless otherwise provided by law, a person may not discharge a firearm within 500 feet of a building occupied by a human, and so on.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I think that's an appropriate amendment. I'd offer that to the committee.
So discussion from the committee. If not, Senator Schmidt moves that oral amendment to page 13, line 22 and 23. Everybody understand it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Is there anybody else who needed to speak with concerns about the bill?
Mr. Chair, before DNR leaves.
Yes, Mr. Meyer. Senator Osmond.
Can't get away that fast, Bob. Mr. Chair, to Mr. Meyer, one of the more hotly discussed topics was muskies. We had bandied about some ideas on doing test cases. I'm not a big fan of doing a complete ban or a complete change from 48 to 55. Was there any further discussion on this? Is DNR actually supporting this now? Where are you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, or Senator Osmond, I apologize. I defer to Director Ed Bogus of the Fish and Wildlife Division.
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick, we did have Don Pereira, our fish chief, here earlier, but he had to go back for another meeting. So, and I was out of town last week, so I missed the testimony in the subcommittee. But just to quickly capsulize it for the full committee, this bill, not sure the section number, would set a statewide minimum for muskies of 55 inches. DNR is currently working on a rule that would set a statewide minimum for muskies of 50 inches. The existing, section 48 on page 21, the existing statewide minimum for muskies is 48 inches. So, Dr. Pereira was in the subcommittee and testified that not all lakes in Minnesota are capable of producing these very large muskies. The sort of the traditional definition of a trophy muskie was 50 inches, but Minnesota has one of the best muskie populations and opportunities of anywhere in the country, and we're finding out that many of these lakes now are producing muskies far larger than 50 inches. And out of the approximately 100 muskie lakes that we have in the state, our fisheries biologists think there are a couple of dozen of those lakes that could produce trophies in the 56-inch class range. And so testimony in the subcommittee, I believe, was that, the DNR's preference would be to go with a 50-inch minimum kind of generally across the state. And there's an exception to that I'll talk about in a minute. But and then on a lake-by-lake basis, like we do for other species, establish like a 56 or a 55 for those lakes that are capable of producing trophy muskies of that caliber. There's also, I should just mention that a lot of the muskies that people catch in the metro lakes, and we have a tremendous metro muskie fishery, but a lot of those are actually hybrids between muskellunge and northern pike, and they're popularly known as tiger muskies. They don't get as big, so we have actually a lower minimum for tiger muskies. So that was a section of the bill that that I had intended to comment on earlier and missed, that DNR would prefer not to set a minimum of 55 in statute, but to work on individual lakes where a limit of that size would be appropriate.
Mr. Chair, and I guess that would go to Senator Hoffman, considering that DNR was saying 50, I mean, I'd be willing to do some modifications. Are you interested, instead of being at 55, going with 50 according to DNR testimony?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmond, no, I'm not. The best practice out there, when you look, and thank you for testifying, that we do have one of the richest muskie in the nation right here, and people are coming from all over just to fish, and they want to get the trophy fish. And so remember when we had a two-tiered system in Minnesota at 40 and 48, it was hard to regulate that. And although we do want to put some stuff in rule, I think the having something in statute is going to help drive that rule much more effectively. And as you are all aware, not only is it the Muskie Association, but the Northern Pike, the Bass, Minnesota Bass, National Bass, folks like that have been commenting about it's the right thing to do due to the fact that we are starting to see that increase in the muskie, and we want to keep this a trophy state.
Is there further discussion on that issue or anything else in the bill?
Mr. Senator Chair, you want to try again? Okay. And, I guess I renew my motion to pass this bill on.
And Senator Schmidt, I believe it is going to state and local tomorrow. Senator Schmidt moves Senate File 2227 be recommended pass as amended be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local. Is there further discussion on that? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Surprisingly little conversation.
Right. You know, the fireworks this year, Mr. Chair. If it's all right, I do have one more bill before the committee here today. Senate File 2276. We're going in order here. And, Mr. Chair, if I could just briefly outline, this is an agency bill from PCA, and it is very much in line with the unsession that we're hearing so much about. Just as general overview here, this is a bill that makes a number of mostly non-controversial changes. First and foremost, it modifies the rule notice requirement to municipalities for clarification of water rule changes. It modifies the septic system tank fee submission deadline requirements. It imposes a sunset date of June 30th, 2019 for the Advisory Council on Water Supply Systems and Wastewater Treatment Facilities. It makes changes in specified PCA rulemaking requirements, and it eliminates a sunset date on the Small Business Air Quality Compliance Assistant Advisory Group. So with that said, I'd like to pass it on to a testifier here from
the agency. Senator Schmidt, you do have an author's amendment, I believe. Is that correct, or am I?
Yeah, you know, we do have an A3 amendment here that I'd like to offer to folks to consider.
So we'll distribute that while Mr. Kudelka goes ahead. Senator Schmidt, because this is the first bill hearing and it is an author's amendment, why don't you move it right now? Senator Schmidt moves the A3 amendment to put the bill in the shape he wants. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
If I could turn it over to agency Kudelka testimony here.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Adalka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you to the senator for carrying the bill. I'll just quickly go through it and address some of the changes in the bill here. Section 1 of the bill deals with rule notification. Currently, any time a rule changes anything with a water standard, any city that touches a body of water needs to be specifically notified of that change. We're doing here is making a specific change. When we do a statewide water quality standard, and it affects every part of the state, we have a very exhaustive system to get out information to folks. We have over 1,800 folks signed up for our water quality standards list server, so they get notification. We notify the larger groups, the League of Minnesota Cities, Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and others. And what we're doing here is just changing the specific that. So when we specifically contact a city, it's about if we're specifically affecting the body of water that they're on. So it's just changing that information. We have a number of cities already on our list server already and find that it would make it more efficient and make sure it pinpoints what's needed for them. Already took out Section 2. You have supported this already in the regulatory efficiency bill. Section 3 of the bill deals with our wastewater program, wastewater and water supply certification advisory committee. It is an advisory committee that both Health and MPCA organized, and this committee has helped us with a wastewater operator certification programs made some much-needed reform. They're a very good organization for feedback for both health and PCA, and we'd like to continue them moving forward. There was a sunset. This extends that sunset. Number four deals with sonar that's done in terms of changes in water quality, air standards, and other land standards. Right now, as you know, rulemaking is the only way an agency can do rulemaking is if it's given the authority explicitly by the legislature. And many times, the overall policy is made on a federal or state level. And the agencies are there to work out the nuts and bolts of what's being handled and how it gets done. And as we do that, we go through a public process that includes the agency needing to make its case on why something is needed and reasonable. And we do that through a SONAR, the Statement of Need and Reasonableness. What this change does is, specific to MPCA, the current law says we have to do that comparing to all the states that surround Minnesota, all the states in the same EPA region, and then the federal standard. What this does is provides us a little bit more flexibility to allow for relevant locations. And where this is important, I'll do two examples. When we're looking at water quality standards, the water that's in the northeast part of the state is much different from the southeast part of the state. It's also very much different than from Minnesota to Iowa or Ohio and the likes. So what we've done is change it to be relevant, that differences. Same case goes for air quality, where if we become non-attainment in the metropolitan area, which means we're not meeting the air quality standards in the state here, if we need to propose something different, we would compare it to other states or locations such as Chicago or Michigan because of Detroit that are in Milwaukee in Wisconsin because they've gone through non-attainment. The idea is to compare us to like states. So we tried to make that difference in the rule here. The language here is different. It does require for us to assess those differences, and my understanding is that there's a difference there, too, on providing a specific analysis and need a reasonableness between each difference. We'd like to continue to work with individuals on that. We do believe that creates a situation where the agency is arguing against eight or less, depending on the relevant states, each difference, and why our professional judgment is different than theirs, even though there may be totally different cases. It really does twist the way the SONAR is from a way of the state making its case on why something's needed, but we'll continue to work with folks on that. The last piece, Section 5, deals with the Small Business Air Quality Compliance Assistance Advisory Council. This is required by federal law. I know that many of the committees have seen advisory committee bills. There's a larger one. In Chapter 15, there's a sunset of all advisory committees at a certain date. Because this is required by federal law, we'd like this to not expire. So that is a summary of the bill quickly. I stand for any questions.
Questions from members of the committee. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have some problems with Section 4 and with the language that's being removed there. And because where I live, quite frankly, having a comparison with the states next door is extremely valid because of similarities that we have. And I think that the citizens and the businesses in Minnesota have a right to that comparison being made, and I disagree with the elimination of that language.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there is still the requirement there. If there are similarities, they would be relevant states to make that comparison to. This is what the agency puts together in its Statement of Need and Reasonableness. It's not the only thing that goes before the Office of Administrative Hearings. Other folks can make other arguments, and so this is one part of what that review was put on. So others may be bringing forward that information also. So it doesn't preclude that from happening.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, I would be more comfortable. I would certainly be much more comfortable leaving that language in. I think it needs to be required.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, this was, if you look at the A3 amendment, so if this section was amended by the A3 amendment, so it now does require them to look at neighboring states. It's a little different from the language that that you see from the current law that before it's stricken, but there is some language in there. So I just want to make sure to point out that the A3 amendment did affect this, so there will still be something in there on comparing neighboring states and EPA standard, EPA Region 5 standards.
And Mr. Chair, if I could add that we had heard from our cities, particularly border cities or organizations representing them, and also the chamber on this matter, and they feel more comfortable with the language that's expressed in the A3 amendment, and that's why we offered it today. So we're trying to strike that right balance between streamlining and following what the PCA is asking for in terms of this on-session legislation, but also making sure that we have the process in place to know how our process is compared to those in other states.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other discussion? There are other people who wanted to testify on the, gather that provision?
Perhaps, Mr. Chair. I think the A3 amendment does address a number of concerns, so we don't necessarily need to hear from them, but if they're interested in speaking.
Looks like they're sort of waving this off. So is there further discussion of the bill? Is there anybody else in the audience who needed to testify to it? If not, Senator Schmidt moves that Senate File 2276, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. Is there any further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And I think that's the end of our agenda for today. We're not meeting tonight. We are meeting Thursday at noon. And are we going to continue Friday? Thursday we may be continuing after the 3 o'clock thing as well, because this committee happens to have nobody on committees right then, and we'd rather not do evening meetings. With that, this meeting is adjourned.
Yeah.